How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm a 31-year-old male, and I live about 50 or so miles north of New York City in a region known as the Mid-Hudson Valley. The story takes place when I was around 19 to 20 years old in a small city known as Newburgh. For those who don't know, Newburgh has a notoriously high crime rate for its small size. It consistently ranked as the murder capital of New York, and it's one of the most dangerous cities in the US. This will be very relevant throughout the entire story. In addition, it's also home to a relatively well-known college known as Mount St. Mary College. My two friends and I, who we'll refer to as Mark and Brian, were going to a party somewhere in town that we had found out about through some friends at the college. On our way, we had saw a few cop cars zoom past us with their sirens on. This will also be important later. Brian decided to stop and get some gas on the main road downtown. As we're pulling in, I'd spotted a group of sketchy guys across the street adjacent to the gas station start to cross and then approach our car. I tried to tell Brian, "Bro, don't stop here. Those dudes are about to pull up on us. Drive away, man!" The dumbass disregards me and then just says, "Bro, it's all good, man," as he then gets out to pump gas. Of course, as this is happening, they approach us aggressively, and one of them pretends to be whimpering in pain.
"Yo, my boy got shot. We need a ride to St. Luke's right now."
St. Luke's is the hospital in the city. When Brian hesitates and then says, "I can't, dude. I'm staying out of this," the group of thugs start banging on the car and shaking it violently, then screaming,
"Open the fucking door or I'm gonna kill all of you!"
Along with all kinds of other crazy ass threats. They then notice a taxi drive by and try to carjack the taxi driver. I tried to use this opportunity to escape and go inside the store. To my horror and anger, I couldn't unlock the door to get out. The fucking dumbass has the child safety lock on. They then return to our car after failing to jack the taxi cab. Mark is now screaming,
"Call the fucking cops!"
They start beating on the car yet again and trying to shake it. One of them screams at Mark,
"If you don't get out of the car now, I'm going to kill you and your fucking friend!"
"Okay, dude, chill! I'm getting out!"
Mark says.
"Don't tell me to fucking chill."
He then leaves the car and goes inside the store. The thugs then cram themselves in the car, with me at the very back. One of them had said something to me very calmly that I don't remember now. Then out of nowhere, they start jumping me. I don't really remember what happened next, but I managed to find my way to the front passenger seat, and I made it out of the car. As I was leaving, the largest one actually kicks me in the face, knocking off my glasses. I then run into the store where my friend's trying to call the cops. As this is happening, another random rough-looking dude starts trying to take the phone from him. In the middle of all this, this random lady then starts saying, "What's the matter? You scared? You're in Newburgh. Don't you know you have to be tough out here? Go cry home to your mommy, you little pussies." Then she says, "They're gone now, you can go outside." Right as she says this, the police pull up. Mark and Brian told them everything that happened. As this is happening, Brian notices a huge crack on the windshield. One of these scumbags smashed the windshield. Brian then went. They were arrested up the road. Brian went along in an unmarked car just to confirm their identity and press charges, since he then needed to file an insurance claim. After we were done with the police and headed home, we smoked a fat-ass blunt to try and calm down after what had just happened. I couldn't sleep that night. I kept hearing nangs around the house that weren't there, and I was jumping around the entire night. I remained hypervigilant for a while after this incident. I even remember one day hearing a party across the street, believing I was hearing screams of terror, like people were getting slaughtered, only to find out it was just a bunch of kids running around having fun. It's really crazy how it affected me. As for the sirens we saw beforehand, we later learned a shooting that had just taken place further up the road at a party close to where we were heading at. As a result, it had set off a chain reaction of several violent incidents throughout the city that night and the days following. One thing I found out that happened a few days later really had me shook. Apparently, just a couple of days after that same incident we were involved in, someone got jumped while pumping gas at the same gas station. The perpetrators beat the shit out of him and then ran him over with his own car before they took off. The man later died from his injuries. I'm very lucky to be alive after that incident. I really hope that I never have to deal with something like that again. Please, everyone, be aware of your surroundings.
Last year, I started a new job at a grocery store doing overnight stocking. This was a chain store local to our state, having a dozen or so locations, but the stores themselves weren't that big. Most nights, we'd have a team of two or three stockers to get the store ready to go for the next day. I'd worked at a few stores before this, so I wasn't new to the whole overnight stocking gig by any means. On this night, I got into work at 10, but was met with the unfortunate news that one of the guys called off, so it was just going to be me and my manager, Yuri, for the night. Yuri was cool, but he didn't talk much, so it always made for a boring shift. But an hour in, I was working in the chip aisle when Yuri suddenly came to the front of the aisle, looking at me with a concerned face.
"Everything okay?"
I asked, pulling my earbuds out. He was breathing heavily and asked me if I saw anyone in the store. I said no, and he told me that he thought he saw someone walk past his aisle a minute ago, but when he went to see, there was no one there. I could tell he was nervous, but he tried to blow it off and went back to work. Once he left, I thought about how that was the most I'd ever talked to him, which made me think maybe he did actually see something. I paid more attention, but the next 3 hours were eventless, and it all kind of faded from my thoughts. We both stocked separate aisles and didn't see each other at all. Around 2 a.m., I had completed all of the work he'd given me for the night, so I went to ask him what to do next. I walked past each aisle until I reached the end of the store, then went back down and double-checked every aisle, but he wasn't there. I looked in the back warehouse and in the office too, but couldn't find him. I thought he had to be in the bathroom or taking a break in his car, so I found some work to keep me busy for 15 minutes, then walked around the whole store again, searching for him. All I found was his cart in an aisle. It was the cart I saw him with at the very beginning of our shift, and it looked like he'd stocked half of the boxes, but never got to the rest. Once I saw that, I started getting nervous. I went out the front doors and scanned the parking lot for any signs of him. His car was in the far back near mine, but it was empty. I even checked the sides of the building to see if he was taking a smoke break. It had been nearly 4 hours since I'd last seen him, and I eventually got so worried that I called the police. Police had to contact the store director to get the code to the CCTV cameras, then they replayed the night. I told them about the time he came up to me to ask about the person he'd seen, and when we rewinded it from there, we saw someone walking through the store. They were being careful, hiding and not making any noise, but Yuri was right. Someone else was there. We watched more, and around 30 minutes after Yuri talked to me, this unknown man came up behind him and held Yuri at gunpoint. It was really disturbing to watch, and knowing I was just a few aisles away with no clue made me feel sick. The man forced Yuri to walk, most likely threatening him to be quiet. He led him out to the back of the building, where he was pushed into a car and driven away. The police said that from the looks of it, the two of them likely knew each other, and this was some sort of personal attack. The man was never identified, and as of now, Yuri hasn't turned up. Even though the police were confident it was a personal attack, I didn't take any chances and left that job a few weeks later, but I don't think I'll ever get over the events of that horrifying night.
A few years ago, my mom and her boyfriend started renting a place on Brindley Mountain. There was nothing truly remarkable about the house when you saw it. Just another home tucked away into the mountains with an uptight landlord. It looked like any other house, but my mother swore it was haunted by the spirit of a little girl. The incidents first started happening shortly after they moved in. Once, while my mom was doing dishes, she thought she heard someone rustling in the back of the house. She was the only one home. Another time, her boyfriend thought my daughter was over because he saw the shadow of a little girl running up the hallway. Several times, they each woke up to the sound of a little girl sobbing. Eventually, it seemed like every week they had a new story to share. At this point in my life, I was an atheist. I believed every ghost story could be summed up to an overactive imagination. Whenever my mother shared her latest encounter with the paranormal, I fought the urge to roll my eyes. That would all change after my separation. I don't want to go into the messy details, but my ex and I were at a breaking point. With nowhere else to go, my mother let me move in with her until I could find a job and get back up on my feet. My ex and I tried to do things amicably and split custody between our three-year-old daughter, Alexis, 50-50. One week she would stay with me at my mom's, and the other week she would stay with her dad at our old house. The breakup was a stressful experience. While it went about as smoothly as you could hope in this situation, I began to struggle with insomnia. As for Alexis, she began to act as rebellious as a toddler can manage. She was hell on two wobbly legs, often knocking over furniture or decorations while climbing on something she shouldn't have been. Her preferred act of mischief was raiding the fridge in the middle of the night. Since she struck in the dead of night, we often didn't catch her until we went for a snack and discovered the box empty. I couldn't sleep one night, so I set up shop in front of my mom's computer in the kitchen. Binging Netflix and Hulu didn't make my eyes any heavier, so around 2 a.m. I switched over to YouTube. My favorite music fogged my mind, but it wasn't enough for the sheep to do their magic. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Alexis standing in the hallway. She had come to scour the fridge for the leftover peanut butter cookies I baked this morning, and hadn't expected me to be up. When you have a rebellious child, sometimes the best thing to do is not give them the attention. Otherwise, you encourage their misbehavior. So, I just sat in my chair, staring at the screen, and waited for her to go back to bed. My favorite song ended, and a new one started as I found my annoyance growing. I swallowed my aggravation, though, and soon enough, Alexis turned and marched back up the hall and into her bedroom. My grin was triumphant as I turned to the screen. But after a few more of my favorite songs, I became aware of my growing discomfort. It was quiet. Too quiet. Ask a parent and they'll tell you all about the moments when you feel your heart in your throat. Like when you let your eyes off your child while stopping for just a second. Sure, most of the time it's only a few moments of terror before turning down the aisle and finding them staring at a toy they want. When you have a precautious toddler, not hearing them can be as terrifying as not seeing them. Usually, the quieter they are, the more dangerous the stunt they're trying to pull. It had been almost 15 minutes, and I hadn't heard Alexis climbing back into her bed or playing with her toys past bedtime. The pit in my stomach grew into a chasm as I stepped into the hall, imagining the worst as I headed for her bedroom. Darkness washed over me in the hallway, the pitch black that only comes late at night when you're all alone. And at that moment, my rational thoughts caught up with my panic and froze me in place as I remembered this was my ex's week with Alexis. I had dropped Alexis off that afternoon, and she would be there until the end of the week. Whoever I saw couldn't have been my daughter. It was a long time before I went to sleep that night. After that, I saw my mother's stories in a new light, and was grateful when I finally found a job and moved out. Oh, and I'm not an atheist anymore.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.